I've done no harm, I keep to myself. There's nothing wrong with my state of mental health. I like it here with my childhood friend. Here they come, those feelings again. Who can it be now?
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. Indeed, who can it be now? Guess what? We have in studio with us today Dan Hendrickson. We're so happy to see him. He is an author, he's a screenwriter, and he's just recently tried his hand at stand-up comedian. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Mo. Thanks for having me in.
Thanks for coming in and telling us what is new with you. First of all, how's summer going? Isn't it great?
It's great. Loving summer. It's going really fast. And of course, the fearsome milestone of July 4th is right ahead. And we all know, unfortunately, what happens once July 4th hits.
And it's technically not the middle of summer, but why do people think that?
You know, within a week or two, they'll be playing the back to school stuff. And everything just gets, we're always like 2 weeks ahead of ourselves. I think that's the problem.
Yes, I do too. So tell us what is new in your life.
Well, I've been having a lot of time to focus on writing, and I've been keeping busy with a number of projects. Over the winter, I co-wrote a screenplay with a friend who wrote a memoir about 20 years ago, and it's about his upbringing in a Catholic orphanage and his life story from there, and how despite a challenging start, he was able to hang in there and eventually see over time that despite the fact he was unhappy about how his childhood went, he realized that without those nuns at the orphanage he was in, he would have been out on the street. And so he ended up being very grateful to their help and support at a very challenging time in his life.
And I love the name of the screenplay.
Sister, Did I Ever Thank You?
Ugh. So it's refreshing to hear a positive story about good things about the Catholic Church, because it's so easy. Hollywood is looking for, I think, negative things.
Yep. He said that too. He said right now it's a positive story at a time when such stories are needed. And you know, he just said it's he had a very his parents had some troubles. His father left in the dead of night, leaving him and his brothers and sisters and mom alone with no power and no resources. And eventually he wound up in the orphanage, and they kept him on the straight and narrow, got him educated, and from there he went on to Boys Town, which is another big hurdle, and made it through there. And really just a remarkable life story, and how he kind of life was going okay, and then he sort of hit a really rough patch and had to go back to the beginning, back to the orphanage actually, and talk to some of the nuns he had come up with, and kind of put his life in perspective.
You know, when you think about that kind of an upbringing, that really isn't something that people do today, is it? And this gentleman isn't even that old.
No, he's in his early 60s. He said the orphanages have really gone away now. It's kind of been taken over by the foster program. And though he says the foster program, there's many good things about it, he said, too, the orphanage in some ways, too, had a lot of benefits and did a lot of good things. So it's just a different philosophy, different way of doing things.
Right. Wow. Well, good luck with that. I hope you come back and tell us a little bit more when that takes off.
You bet.
So, first of all, we'll get to your writing in a second, but so you tried your hand at stand-up comedian. What the heck? That is brave.
You know, it's brave. It's foolhardy on some levels. It's one of those things, I think I have to do it every once in a while to remind myself maybe I'm not cut out to be a stand-up comedian, but I've got that itch that I always want to try it. And I will say this time went a little bit better, I think, or even better than some of the other times. But the advantage I had this time is that I've got a lot of life experience. You realize that no matter what happens on stage, you're going to walk off and life's going to keep going on. The world's going to keep spinning. And I think having that kind of being able to shut the fear down and just enjoy myself. More than one person came up to me afterwards and said, you know, it was easy to see you were having fun up there. And I think me having fun made it fun for other people.
So where did you do this?
Sisyphus Brewing in just off of downtown Minneapolis. Okay. Just a little brew pub. And
are they a forgiving audience?
Well, I kind of stacked the deck with homers. I had a lot of friends and family there. I think there were only a handful of folks I didn't know. But, you know, that's what it is. You play to your base. You reach out to people who have supported you in the past. I let them know that I was going to try this, and I had some fresh new material. Enough people came out to make it a really fun night. And it's just a really great venue, too. They've got a nice little room, like a miniature comedy club, and lights, the stage, everything. And it was a really fun night.
So where does your humor humor come from? What kind of jokes did you tell? Because you're married, you have kids.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that enters in. I think a lot of it is really abstract, small things. One of the lines that really got a big reaction, and I really didn't think much of it, but sometimes that's how it is with comedy. A joke you think is great doesn't really go anywhere, and a joke you think, kind of hits. And it was sort of an observation on the fly. I said, well, you know what's funny in our world, if you don't want something folded, you put it in a folder. And it was just kind of, then I did kind of a Seinfeld beat there. And it just, like, it was just a slow, it just slowly caught around the room. It just took a second to hit. And then I had a friend there, and he just, I don't know, something about that particular line really hit him. And so that was fun. He was a great laugher, I think. You and I were talking. You said you're a great laugher at comedy shows. He's a very good laugher.
I've had two friends that have tried their hand at stand-up comedy, and they both asked me to go and sit in the front row. Because I think sometimes you just laugh when you hear somebody else laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it feeds. Well, it's like a movie theater. You can see a movie, and if the crowd's into it, you'll think, hey, this is a great movie. Then you bring a friend to it or a family member, like, this is such a great movie. And then the crowd sits there like a bunch of rocks, and they're like, right. Oh, yeah, that was great. You know, so it's just, it really depends upon how people are getting into it, and the more people that do are going to draw the rest of the crowd in.
So is it something that you want to continue doing, or was it something to kind of on your bucket list? To be a stand-up comedian?
I think I had a lot of new material, and I was just sort of looking to get up in that. I would say it's kind of a hybrid of comedy and poetry. It was sort of some comedic poems with some comedy bits built on the end of those, and sort of selling it like a stand-up versus just my normal neighborhood coffee shop reading. I remember, like, at some point in the night, I remember thinking, like, wow, I'm really getting into this. You know, I was sweating, and I was,
oh,
you know.
Brother.
Yeah, well, I mean, in a good way, though. I mean, it was, like, a good energy.
Did you sit on a stool, or did you stand?
No, I stood my ground behind the mic. Okay. And and what I think what I liked about it, what I will give myself points for, is even the jokes that didn't hit, even the times where kind of we hit a rough patch, you know, I just, you just keep moving, you know, and you have to acknowledge, yeah, that didn't work. I think David Letterman sort of provided, I think sometimes David Letterman actually enjoyed when a joke would bomb.
No
and then
kidding.
He could kind of ride that for the next 5 minutes and make it funny. So I tried to do a little bit of that. I'm not as nearly as good as David Letterman, but, you know, it was sort of that mind frame, like, all right, we're just going to keep going with it, you know, and everyone was on board with that.
Well, it's not for everyone.
It's not for, I think a lot of people enjoy being in the crowd. There's a little bit of fear there too. I'm not the kind of person that would ever go into the crowd and say, you know, what do you do? I'm not that good on my feet. But I think most people enjoy stand-up comedy, but the idea of getting up there for most people, for me, you know, 20 years ago, the idea of going up on stage with a microphone and just talking, I would have been cowering behind the bar. So I have made some strides, and and some of that is just hard life experience and realizing no matter what happens, life's gonna go on. I'll come out of it. It'll be
right.
Okay.
Right. Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
So you'll do it again.
I will do it again, but I think given the two choices, like a stand-up comedy room or your neighborhood coffee shop, what have you, I'm a little bit more at home in the neighborhood coffee shop, I think. It's just really more my environment. I don't have to work quite, not that I'm lazy, but I'm not one of those, not exactly lazy. I don't know, being a comic, you really have to put a lot of oomph. I mean, it takes a lot from inside to get it out there.
Well, if you were sweating.
I was sweating, I won't lie to you. It was like a full workout, but it was one of those ones, like the burn, I felt the burn, it was good, you know, so it was like, yeah, so it was a fun night. It was great seeing some people I hadn't seen in years. My family came down. It was a good night.
Oh, I bet it was. So let's talk about the coffee shop action that you've been doing.
A lot of writing at a coffee shop. I've always been one of those people who, I'm not working a straight 8-to-5 job right now. I'm kind of freelancing. And I remember when I did have a job like that, I'd often go to coffee shops and think, you know, look at the guy or the gal in the corner on the computer thinking, you know, I want to be that person someday. So for right now, the last few months, I have been kind of that person toiling away on different projects. And it's been really good. It's kind of, you get to meet some people, obviously. You get to be kind of the neighborhood gadfly. And I've enjoyed it. Now, it is nice to get paid. I do like a steady paycheck. So I am looking for work too, but it's been a really interesting time, and I've hopefully made good use of it.
So when you are doing your writing, how is it that you don't get distracted? Because when I'm in a coffee shop, I'm distracted by people coming in and out, and I'm fascinated by people that can go someplace like that all day.
Mm-hmm. I think what I do is sort of accept that every once in a while, if I have the urge to see what's happening on Twitter or whatever,
okay.
I just carve out 10 minutes and I think to myself, okay, you know, and just indulge that and don't get wrapped up into it. Don't get sucked into that world because it's very easy to do. So try to limit myself to maybe 10, 15 minutes on this or that and then just jump back to it. You know, usually sometimes even that time away will kind of recharge or give me a new angle to come at it when I return to my keyboard and start tapping away again.
Right. So what are you tapping away on now?
Well, two projects. The material for the comedy show recently, the stand-up comedy show, is a collection of work called Comedy Album. And again, they're short, kind of punchier poems that it's sort of a really fine line. Some, I think, does veer over into stand-up territory, and some is more comedic poetry. So I thought, being I'm kind of straddling that line anyways, why not try it as stand-up? Test it out. It was sort of a test run, too, for some material, and it really gave me some good insight into things that were working and things that needed work. And I think from that standpoint, it was a very productive show.
That's such a public way of getting feedback.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, look, I mean, no matter who you are, though, even people like Seinfeld and, you know, they go to open mics in New York, you know, they'll sneak on stage at the end of the night and do a fresh 5-10 minutes.
Who is going to boo them, though?
Well, that's just it. And in fairness to me, I did kind of stack the deck with Homer, so
right.
I might have had a stray boo here or there. If they could have certainly given me a hard time, but I think people said, okay, he's going to try this. He's up there standing by himself. Let's give him right. The benefit of the doubt. So ideally.
So tell us a little bit more about these two projects in particular that you're working on.
Yep. And then the other one is actually a screenplay. And that's the other thing I've been focusing my time on, is a screenplay, kind of semi-autobiographical. When I moved down to Minneapolis, I had a courier job. I was scraping by. I was, I didn't really know a lot of people in town. I had some friends, but, you know, they were all wrapped up in their own lives. So I was kind of, you know, sort of like ripping the page and starting over for me. So it's kind of based on that portion of my life where it's the character is scraping by. Is maybe a little bit of an underachiever. Has
Did
friends.
You know you were scraping by in an underachiever?
Oh, I was pretty aware of it.
Oh, you were. Okay.
But I mean, but it was a new chapter in my life, so right. I was excited, and it didn't seem.
That's what I mean.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look back and you think, "Oh my stars!"
Yeah.
But you didn't realize that those really were the good old days.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some of that. It was kind of a fresh new environment. And, you know, again, I was doing something I was excited about. I came back to Minneapolis thinking, you know, this is I'm making a stand here for better or worse. And it's been a great run. But anyways, and so the character kind of has to come to some hard truths, because this character also dabbles in comedy. And though he's been told he has some talent, he's scared to go down that route, and yet really has limited options because, as he says, making people laugh is one of the few skills he has, which I can somewhat sympathize with a bit. I sort of know that beat.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a weird skill to have. You know what I mean? It's not like being a dentist where you know you're going to work on people's teeth. Being funny or something of a comedian, there aren't a whole lot of roads. I mean, there's really not a lot of paths to take.
No, especially in middle school when you're told to thwart that. Because I have one of those at home.
Yes.
That apparently is a comedian.
Yeah. Well, keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on him.
Oh, you got that right. You got that right. But to me, you are more of an introvert.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where I was almost, there was a point in my life I was almost like self-destructively shy. And there comes a point where you have to find a way past that. I mean, I think.
Not everyone does, though.
No. But where I was, I had no choice. I mean, I just literally, I look at it as evolution. I mean, public speaking used to terrify me. The idea of this 20 years ago, sitting behind a microphone talking to you would have sent me running out of the room screaming, probably.
That happens a lot.
I doubt it, but it does. It's just, I look at it as evolution, and okay. I think the main thing I will give myself points for is being open to change and recognizing that what worked 5 years ago, it may not work, and you have to find another gear.
You know, those are really life lessons, though, aren't they? Because we have seasons in our life when certain things are happening, and then you have a new season, and you have to approach it in a positive way.
You have to. I mean, when I look back at my life, times I took a leap, did something I wasn't sure I could handle or thought was even over my head, and took it on head on, that's where you do the most growing. I mean, it sounds trite, but it's true. I mean, you have to push your boundaries to stretch those boundaries and figure out just what your limits are. And I am a long ways past what I thought my old limits were, so I'm trying to keep pushing.
So how did you make the jump from being a courier to you got into the business world?
Yeah, it was just time. Basically, I think for me, and this happens in the movie script as well, the courier has some kind of scary brushes with bad weather. I know there were a couple times on my runs where I'd be out in the middle of a snowstorm and I couldn't see much more than 10 feet in front of me and 5 feet behind me. And I think there came a point where it was just like, you know, I think maybe there's something else I could be doing. And God bless the people that do it. And I enjoyed it when I did it, but I sure didn't like those days too much. But even that taught me a little lesson, because I remember thinking, well, I can only see 10 feet. That's all I can worry about, which is very much like life. I mean, all you can really see is 10 feet in front of you. So it's maybe not a bad lesson really there. Just don't get too far ahead of yourself and accept the fact that it's day by day. And that, so it did teach me some valuable lessons, but it was time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you really turned it up because you became a spokesperson mm-hmm. for a company. So,
well, that too was kind of an evolution.
For somebody that's a shy mm-hmm. person, supposedly an introvert.
Well, I took the job after 8 years of kind of doing different things to build up to that. And then I remember that when I took the job the night before I started, I remember I was awake until about 4 a.m. thinking, what have I gotten myself into here? And there it is again. I mean, just by saying, maybe I could do this, rather than, oh my gosh, I could never do that, it opened a door for me. And it's a door I'm still walking through.
But you do see you have the gift of gab.
I'm a talker. As my friend tells me, you don't like silence very much. He tells me that every time I see him. You don't like silence very much. Like, awkward pauses, not your thing. And it's true. I tend to rush in and fill the gaps.
Well, you fill them very well.
Well, thank you. Always nice talking to you as well.
So tell me where we can learn more about your upcoming projects.
Right. Well, I've got a Facebook page, like a lot of people. I know a lot of authors. It's Dan Hendrickson Writer. And I'm going to be posting news about these new projects coming out here over the next, ideally, I think, comedy album will be out as a book by August. And then from there, it's just going to be trying to do some touring. I've always had kind of a dream of becoming a regional Mark Twain, and that's a big goal, but just someone who can go from town to town, maybe in the upper Midwest here, and do 25, 30 people shows and try and build a name that way. I love performing, and I think that would be a really fun way to do things for a while.
I love that idea.
I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, no kidding.
And if I could get paid like Mark Twain someday, that'd be nice too.
Yes, exactly. Great to see you again, and congratulations on all your successes. Dan Hendrickson, he is a poet, he's an author, he's a screenwriter, and he's a stand-up comedian, and we are thrilled that he came to Hastings to fill us in about what is going on with him, and we wish you continued success.
Thanks, Maureen.
And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
And I'm not feeling right. All I wish is to be alone.